Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast. See what the guys have to say on Cougar Board. Find them at 4Mac and CougarCast. Go hard, go fast.
What is up? My name is Keith Schertz, and I'm alone. That's right, Tosh McIntosh is off this week. He is on work vacation. Don't feel bad for him, though. He's in Hawaii. So, anyway, he's not here today, so it's just me today, and so I wanted to have a few minutes to talk about a couple things that are on my mind, and then later on in the show, we're going to welcome a couple Vanquish the Foe writers. We're going to have on first James Taylor. He's going to talk to us about his article he wrote about how there are some worrying trends with the BYU football team. Also, then we will have a conversation with him about BYU basketball. That season is coming up on us soon, and so that's very exciting. And then later on after that, we'll have a conversation with Kevin Kennedy, one of the managing editors of VanquishTheFoe.com. And Kevin is the man to read and to find on the internet if you want to know about the BYU Olympic sports. And so I'm sure we'll talk a little bit of the women's basketball team, a women's soccer team, and women's volleyball team. This guy's smart. He's following these the Olympic sports for BYU, and he's the best guy to read on the internet about that sort of stuff. Okay, first thing I wanted to cover, BYU obviously 4-0, everything going very well for the Cougars at this point. 4-0 is a huge feat. It's the seventh time in the history of the school that BYU has ever found themselves in a position where they're 4-0. Bye week is here, and you know, with the bye week, I always like to think about what are some of the things that I think need the most improvement on this team. There was a couple things that I wanted to talk about quickly. First, the wide receivers for BYU did a better job of trying to get open for Taysom Hill. On the Mitchell Juergens touchdown pass, Mitchell Juergens did something that I had not seen a receiver do up to that point on that play, and it led to a touchdown. It was a scramble drill, and Taysom was running to the right. As he found himself almost all the way to the sideline, what the BYU receivers do on every scramble drill, and this is not unique to BYU, almost every receiver does this everywhere, is they all dive to the near sideline. So they run in the same direction as Taysom, and they try to give him an option and find a little space. Both he and Jordan Leslie were running to that sideline. Upon getting to the sideline, what's happened all year this year is that the Cougar receiver will then just kind of stand there and be covered, or they may try to get a block in if Taysom gets close. But the thing that I called for the week before was for somebody to turn and then run upfield run downfield so that the you know that gives Taysom another option with his arm, because as soon as you get to that sideline, there's zero options for Taysom Hill. So Mitchell Juergens did that. He turned, he went upfield, he made a very smart play as a receiver, found a little space. It's harder to defend a guy who keeps moving. And he found a little space. Taysom laid it up over the top right to Mitchell Juergens, and he ran right into the end zone. Big play. It's fantastically done by them. Did not have a chance to continue to schedule out map out what Taysom's throwing patterns were against Virginia yet. But one of the things that I wanted to cover is that I continued to see that he's very good when the ball travels 10 yards or less downfield, and he's okay if he throws further than 10 yards down the field. One of the other things that I wanted to take away from the game is that the running game for BYU, as always, is very, very good. And if you didn't believe that offensive linemen are better at certain things than other things, that there's different things, you should believe it with this team, because this offensive line does a very good job on run block. But they are are not so great when it comes to pass block. Right now, the Cougars rank 122nd in the country in sacks allowed. They are giving up sacks at a faster rate than the 2013 team did. And if you've listened to the show, you've heard Tosh talk about last year's offensive line. He referred to them as a high school offensive line, that's one of the worst offensive lines in all of college football, and that certainly one of the worst the Cougars have ever had. And despite all that, I think a lot of people would say this year's team has a better offensive line, but it doesn't seem like they're protecting Taysom all that much. They're one of the very worst teams in the country at not having their quarterback get sacked. And that's huge because, again, you want to limit the amount of hits that Taysom takes because, you know, he's a dual threat quarterback. So I think that there needs to be a lot more focus and attention on the pass blocking for this Cougar offense. I think that in order to throw downfield, you got to have a lot of things go right. And I don't know if we can really judge Taysom accurately yet on his ability to throw downfield because he is running for his life constantly with that offensive line. And he's also not getting – his receivers aren't getting open for him. One of the positive developments, though, is there's a lot more slants in the game and a lot more of those things to try to open up and get the ball out of Taysom's hands just a little bit quicker. But again, over 1 out of 3 of his dropbacks when it's a pass play result in him scrambling or getting sacked or throwing the ball away. So this is not good. And so, you know, basically it was like 35% of the time a pass play is going to become a broken play. And that certainly is not good enough. And a lot of that has to do with those guys up front. So they've got to do a better job pass blocking. And, you know, I think some of this has to do with the fact that we've got two true freshmen starting on the offensive line and essentially freshmen because they just barely got back from their mission and they're just getting the feel of things again. But hopefully there's, you know, improvement with that as the season goes on. Scott Arlano continues to be awesome. Had a great year so far. And, you know, I mean, honestly, in a lot of ways, that Virginia game, a lot of that was really benefited by the play of Scott Arlano. You know, it's worth pointing out when the punter does well. And then the last thing I wanted to try to get into when it comes to that Virginia game is, you know, I think that the Cougars, I think they played well. And I think that they did things that they needed to do. And, you know, a lot of people are coming after this defense as if, you know, this isn't what we've seen from our defenses in years past, but it's exactly what we've seen from our year. Like, the BYU defense is forcing a ton of turnovers. Okay. They're 26th in the country in the amount of, you know, possessions they've taken away from another team by forcing a turnover. So they've done very good at forcing turnovers. But one of the things that is just one of the principles of Bronco D, and you got Colt there calling the plays now, Nick Howell, right, because he's a little Bronco. The bottom line is that he and Bronco believe in bend, don't break, and point management. And so if it's third and long, you know, the Cougars – they tend to not favor trying to put heavy pressure on. They try to guard their zones, and it looks to me as if the Cougars purposely make that decision, and then they gamble when they have to and tighten up when they have to later on in the possession when they're closer to the goal line. And you know, the whole point of the Bronco defensive philosophy is try to get stops, but the biggest thing is don't give up six, give up three, right? And that's who they are. That's who Bronco is. And I don't really see anything that was much different than I've seen over the last decade of Bronco. Is I just saw this team who made, you know, three turnovers happen, and they did enough to give BYU an opportunity to win. And they did a nice job turning a few touchdowns into field goals. And that becomes huge. I mean, that ended up being the difference in the game. And so I really feel that kind of the criticism of the defense I've been a little bit surprised at. I think people have a different view than what is reality of what a Bronco D is. And maybe I'm the one with the skewed view. But my sense is that we've seen quite a bit of this. It's not crazy for a team like Virginia, who seems adequate as an opponent, and seemed very good, to be able to put up some points on this Cougar D. But we did stop them when it came to red zone situations. And so that's kind of the main thing. Obviously, you know, penalties are a big factor, too, that hurt the Cougars in that game. And they couldn't seem to get those third down stops like they needed. But again, you know, this is one of those things that when you cheer for BYU under the current philosophy that they have, they don't give up big plays. And by big plays, I mean 50-yard, 60-yard plays. They are willing to give up 15, right, and then really choke up when it comes time. So it's just who they are. And if you're expecting them to hold every opponent to 14 points or less, you're going to be very disappointed. Because I think 3 or 4 of the remaining 8 opponents, maybe 5 of them, are going to find their ways into the 20s and higher. And so I just think that you need to expect that, and that's who they are, and that's okay. The other thing with that is, you know, they've only forced 7 sacks this year. They didn't get a sack against Houston. They didn't get a sack against Virginia. And so they're not necessarily, you know, the best team at getting pressure on the quarterback. And so, again, if you don't get any pressure on the quarterback and receivers have time to work and he can hang out in that pocket, you know, quarterbacks know what they're doing and they're going to find a guy eventually. So those are some of my takeaways. But, again, 4-0, seventh time that they've ever done it. Last time we ever did it was 2008. Time before that was 2001. So enjoy the 4-0 record. And hopefully those guys are taking the time to relax a little bit, enjoy the bye week, and get ready for the Aggies next week. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to get ready to bring in James Taylor from VanquishTheFoe.com to talk a little bit about his article and also to talk about men's hoops. Also wanted to report back. I got a chance to call my first BYU hockey game. Enjoyed that. It was a good experience. Weber State came out winning 9-4, but this BYU hockey team is improving. They're going to get better as the year went out. I went to one of their practices and really enjoyed that. So I'm going to play the promo for BYU hockey, and then we'll bring in James Taylor. Thanks.
BYU Hockey is coming to Vanquish the Foe. Follow the Cougars in their 2014-15 season as they're on the prowl at the Peaks Ice Arena. Listen to each home game live on Vanquish the Foe.
The next opportunity to listen to them, you can find the broadcast for it on VanquishTheFoe.com. Also, you could go to Mixlr, MIXLR.com/BYU-hockey. You can listen to it there. The broadcast starts at 6:45, and their next game is on September 26th, and they are playing the University of Utah. And now it's a pleasure to bring onto the show James Taylor from VanquishTheFoe.com. James, first thing I wanted to talk to you about was you wrote an article just after the Virginia game about the worrying trends of this Virginia team. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about what you're worried about?
Well, first off, I know I've caught some flack from my friends and people who've read the article saying I'm kind of being a defeatist, and that wasn't my point. My point was that I personally believe that BYU needs to go undefeated to stay nationally relevant.
Right.
And to do that, they had to fix some things to maintain to get to 12-0. We're only at 4-0, which is great, but if we want to get to 12-0, there's got to be some things that changes.
So, and as they go along, as the season, as they improve, maybe they can continue to work their way towards that 12-0 mark. But what are some of the things in particular that you would like to see change?
First and foremost, I'd like to see the penalties go down.
Yeah, we lead the nation in penalties. Yeah, that absolutely has to go down.
Yeah, and what I'm going to say is going to sound critical of Bronco, and I don't mean it that way. I'm just not buying what he says when he says he's okay with aggression penalties. Because a lot of these aggression penalties, or what he's quoting as aggression penalties, to me, when you watch them, aren't aggression. It's just pure, almost stupidity on the part of a player deciding to just do something silly
right.
at a critical time.
So it's an issue of discipline versus aggression. I think I agree with you. Like, the personal fouls and things like that have come up. Those have seemed to be more for whatever personal reason, undisciplined, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But I have noticed, like, I was kind of joking with a few of my friends in my section during the game that other teams should learn from Virginia, just throw downfield. You might just complete it, or you're certainly going to be able to draw a pass interference off the secondary. Do you think those are just aggression things, or are there technique things that they're not doing right? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
To be honest, I'm not sure because I can't go to the games. I work nights, so
right.
I only see what I see on TV, and I don't see coverage. I see blocking. For that aspect, I can see a lot of things going on up front. So I don't see the back end plays until they've already happened.
Right.
I do know that some things that I've seen, like a couple times. Jordan Johnson got beat. It just looks like he's not quite 100% from where he was before his injury. And he's only played a little bit since, you know, he's been healthy.
Right.
So those things you're okay with. And this game really is built offensively to favor the offense, not really to... Defense is always at a disadvantage.
The deck is definitely stacked against the defense, no question. I guess one of the things that I also thought that, you know, obviously the penalties have been a big problem, but I also think that you wrote a little bit about how the defense is surrendering a lot of third and longs and a lot of passing yards.
Yeah. And I think sometimes on that, it's first off, they have given up a lot of first downs in penalty situations. I look back to the Virginia game. And the two Virginia drives were kept going by third and long penalties.
Right.
The two ones that scored. One was the Fua celebration, and then there was another one that was a late hit. It might have been Fua too. I can't remember.
Right.
But even on that, even on the touchdown drive, I believe Austin Heater got a pick, but was called back for roughing the passer on low, I believe. And it's just little things like that where it's, you know. A bam-bam play, I got it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, if it's one of those heat-of-the-moments things, like, you can take some of this stuff, like, you know, if they, you know, with Bills crashing someone across the middle or whatever it is.
I'm just going to bring that up. Bills, you're fine with that one. His targeting penalty or whatever it was against Houston, you're going to live with that. He's going to give you, more often than not, he's going to give you a positive play than the penalty.
Right. Well, and it ended up getting wiped away, but the point is that's an aggression play, right?
Yeah.
And so that's one of those things that we have on it. I guess one of the things I wanted to check with you then on I know we're 4 weeks in, they're just 4-0, but where do you stand? I mean, obviously everyone would love to see this team go all the way, run the rest of the way. Few good challenges left. How are you feeling about the Cougars' chances?
You know, I feel pretty good about them. I really do. The schemes that still scare me are California now that Cal's done okay.
Yep.
Especially going to California, it kind of feels like a trap game to me.
It feels a little bit like that, but one thing to keep your head up about is they're going to have the big game against Stanford the week before they get the Cougars. And so That's, you know, it's, I think BYU and Utah have terrible records the week after playing each other. And so I expect Cal to be a little bit beat up. But so that's my bright side with Cal. But I agree with you. That's a tough game.
And then going to Boise, I hate going to Boise because it feels like Boise always has some miracle happen for them to win in Boise.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, whether our kicking is bad or whether, yeah. No, it hasn't been a happy place when we've gone up to Boise so far. So that's also a scary one. Also, East Coast, right? Short week, East Coast.
Yeah.
UCF. And UCF's had a couple tough losses, right?
That's the last one that scares me. And that's a, you know, you go, the travel at that point could really catch up to them, you know, going back and forth and back and forth. And that's the only, you know, the downside of the independent schedules, you have to take games where you can get them. And, you know, it's created a short weeks a couple times for these guys, especially big games on short weeks.
Yeah.
Like the Houston game.
Right. And that's just the way that it's got to be. But hopefully BYU can learn as time goes on. You know, they've had several years now to be in this independent thing where there's going to be, what, three games this year that were short week games? I think it's always sort of been that way. So maybe this is the year where a lot of those things begin to, you know, try to come together a little bit. Uh-huh. I wanted to ask then, so on the give percentage, what do you think? 12-0? What do you think?
Ooh, I'd give it right now probably about a 75%.
Wow. That's confident. That's really confident.
Yeah, I really do feel that they're going to have a special season, and more so, I feel like they need to. And I think that this team really also wants to have that special season. I feel like they will be prepared as much as they can be for every game.
So, and when you say they need to, you're referring to just that they're not included in the picture right now?
Yeah. And if they want to get in that picture, you have to stay relevant. You have to, you know, even if they go 12-0 this year, and let's say they do go 12-0 and they just blow people out, you know, winning 45-10 the rest of the way, basically, they're still not going to get in the 14 playoff, most likely.
Right.
And so, to crash the party, I'll use Boise State as an example. Boise State's first good year, they didn't go to the BCS. It was that third and fourth and fifth year that they really started to get included in those games. And so I feel that a special year this year would maintain relevancy, go into relevancy next year, where they actually have a really tough schedule, and if they could come through that, they really can make some noise nationally.
So Tosh isn't here to be the resident optimist. I'm our resident pessimist on the show. But so one of the things that I want to ask you about then is you gave them 75% chance of running the table. That's really good. One of the things that I wanted to then say is what would need to happen for us to fall then on the short end of the odds there and have a loss go the wrong way. Like, what do you see having happen if they're going to end up dropping a game?
You know, they would have to play a little bit like they did last Saturday, where on big situations, they made mistakes. You know, giving up third and 15s or third and 17s, passive interference penalties, turnover. They didn't have any turnovers on Saturday, but turning the ball over.
Right.
You know, Taysom and Jamal had the fumbled snap. I mean, fumbled exchange. You know, those are things that could go opposite them.
Right. Virginia played basically a perfect game against BYU. First of all, Virginia was very good, but they played basically perfect. They controlled time of possession. They did everything right. The only thing they did wrong was they gave up the long kick return and then the three turnovers. So, the return by Rob Daniel on that interception return, you know, basically set up Cougars for some easy points. And yeah, that was the big difference in that game. You know, Virginia had BYU. They could have had them had they done things. But BYU capitalized where they would. You know, they didn't have the ball that much. The offense, I'm really, you know, emboldened by that offense for the amount of time possession they had and the way they scored 34 points. That was really, really well done. So I'm with you, though. I think that there's room for that. I'll tell you the biggest thing that I think nobody wants to mention, but the dream goes out the window, right, if number four gets hurt.
Oh, yeah. And that's actually one thing I was going to bring up when you said things that need to happen. If he could take less hits, and what I mean by that is by less designed runs where they can just tee off on him, you know, let him drop back and let him make plays. If he doesn't have a pass, then say, all right, go.
Right.
But don't run him nearly as much. And I know that it's kind of their bread and butter over the last 2 years. When you need a first down, we're going quarterback sneak or quarterback draw, or we're going to do the zone read, but we all really know Taysom's pulling it.
Right.
And maybe trust Jamal Williams a little bit more. I mean,
Jamal's numbers on short distances are really good. So
yeah, I mean, the guy is just – he's a really special back because, yes, he's a junior, but what is he, 19?
Yeah, I think he's 20 now, yeah.
Is he 20 now? I mean, he just runs so hard, and he never gets brought down by one guy. It's two guys, three guys. You know, in some ways, he reminds me a lot of Marshawn Lynch, where that first guy will hit him, but it's like, who cares?
Right. He runs hard, and that determination that Jamal has, you know, it's really, I mean, it's crazy because he might end up being the finest running back BYU ever had, and yet he'll go underappreciated because he played with Taysom Hill.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those really, you know, interesting things. So they got to clean up some of the things. One other thing I wanted to try to hit with you is you know, you kind of laid into not laid into, but you kind of credited the secondary with some of the troubles with defending the pass, and I do it for like the penalties that they're getting, but boy, we're not getting a whole lot of pressure on that quarterback. We've now had two straight games where we didn't record a sack. In the last two
actually,
games.
I was rewatching both of those games since I wrote that article, and it's really apparent that they need Bronson Kafusi.
Right.
Because in that first game where he did play, he did make some plays in the backfield, and they're just not getting the push from the defensive line and the linebackers like they've come to get the last 4 years.
Yeah, and one of the things that I was just taking a look at was you know, they're up to 7-4. And generally, the thing that they have had outside of that 2012 year when Ziggy was on the team, they've kind of started, you know, not super fast when it comes to sacks. They've kind of struggled near the beginning of the year, and that's probably why we've started slow record wise as well.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I also wanted to just kind of mention is to be fair, we didn't get a sack against Virginia either of the years we played them. So. Their offensive line handled our defensive rush both last year and this year. And so what I want to say is, you know, we saw a lot of Fred Warner got a lot of time. You see a lot of Troy Hines recently. You know, I don't know why they continued to go a little deeper in those outside linebackers, but did you agree with some of that and going away from Elisa and trying more to look to the depth to try to help that?
You know, I can understand coming from a coach's viewpoint why you'd want to try that, because Elise has played well, but he's just been like in the right spots for you. He hasn't really kind of made great plays. Like even the pick that he had against Texas, he recognized the coverage, dropped back to right where he was supposed to be, and he got the pick.
Right.
It wasn't like he jumped 10 feet in the air and got this amazing interception. And so
just
I can
fortuitous.
Understand why they're going with these guys who they recruited and were such highly touted recruits. But you have to look at the kind of the results and wonder, do you just kind of stick with those older guys for now and really wait to give those guys some time until there's a little bit less on the line.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it develops going forward. And I think, you know, the guy like Kyle Van Noy really benefited, you know, about halfway through, about this point as a freshman, he finally started getting time. and he really turned into something. So I'm kind of on board with letting Fred Warner get his downs and Troy Hines get some downs and see if we can get our next generation of outside backers going. Okay. Mm-hmm. James, let's move on. Let's go to basketball. You wanted to talk a little bit about the men's hoops team. And
yes.
In particular, I guess the first thing that is on everybody's mind, right, is how amazing is Kyle Collinsworth for tearing his ACL near the end of the year last year, and it looks like he's going to be back for game one.
And that's going to be huge. I also wrote the basketball previews for Vanquish the Foe, and everything I wrote was based on if Kyle Collinsworth is healthy.
Right.
If Kyle Collinsworth is healthy. And, you know, now that they're saying he's healthy, it could shape up to be a year that really could see some special things from this team.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Kyle's very good, and he, you know, became the preferred guy at the point last year. Controversial or not, that's what happened within the system, is he became the preferred guy. And one of the things that I, you know, was taking a look at as I talked about this year, but I think it's just gone underrated. As crazy as this sounds, you know, we've spent the last 2 years talking about Brandon Davies' foul troubles and Matt Carlino's inconsistency, and not enough time talking about the brilliance of Tyler Haws.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's a guy, he's fifth all-time in scoring. It looks like he's going to finish first, and he's a guy that is automatic offense for this team. And, you know, as a senior, whenever we've had one of these top five scorers as a senior, the Cougars have really put in a very nice year.
Yeah. And Tyler Haws is probably the player that benefits the most from having Collinsworth back. Because as you watch Tyler Haws, he's extremely talented. He's an amazing shooter. But he doesn't create a whole lot of his own offense. Like, you don't throw him the ball on the wing and say, get us a bucket. You run him through two or three screens. And having Kyle Collinsworth back, who is a guy that you can throw the ball to and say, make something happen.
Right. Get to the rim.
Free up Tyler, because people can't just key on Haws the whole time. And so for me, that's something I'm really excited to see, because now you're really looking at Haws. You know, he's upped his, you know, since he came off his mission, he's kind of upped his scoring about by 3 points per game. So if he does that again this year, you're talking almost a Jimmer-like year as far as production.
Yeah, and I think he has it in him. One of the things that he, I know, has been working on to improve this year is deep shooting. If he can stretch the floor even further, holy smokes.
Well, especially, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, when he's shooting that mid-range jumper, he's got to be a high, high percentage, and then it drops to about 39 on the three-point line. So even if it's up, you know, 3-4 percentage points, you're talking about a guy who you legitimately have to worry about behind that line.
Right.
And that adds a whole other dimension to his game. It adds a whole other spacing issue to the floor. And especially with young bigs, space is everything, where if they can just go one-on-one rather than having to deal with double teams, you could see a really nice year from some of these young big guys.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, just to add to that, is as a three, a lot of people like to refer to Tyler Haws as a two, or that, you know, why has Rose played him out of position, but I like him at the three. And as a three, that's a defensive matchup that BYU is always going to like. Like, there's very few defenders who are going to be able to handle that, especially with this added range. I mean, nobody's handled it when he's been shooting 15-footers, you know, and so if he starts shooting from 20 feet out, who's going to guard him?
No one. I mean, especially, what are you going to do? Are you going to put a littler, more athletic guy, which kind of plays into your hands on him? Well, then he's just going to post you up at 15 feet and hit the turnaround jump shot. Are you going to put the longer guy on him? Well, now he's going to put the ball on the floor and attack. And that guy who's not used to running through two or three screens is now going to be tired by the time Tyler Haws catches the ball. So you're looking at a whole nother development of his game.
Yeah, and he does things that are unlike anybody else in all the college games. So, yeah.
Seriously.
No, just try to appreciate him this year. Hopefully this year is about him. It's not about, you know, the other things that are going on around him, which seems to have just been basically his entire career at this point, you know.
Yeah.
So, But one of the things that I wanted to mention to you is, you know, there's been so much focus on Matt Carlino and filling the void of that point guard spot and all that. And that's a lot of focus on a guy that was the sixth man last year. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of get at when we talked about this was, is I think the bigger problem isn't with the guards with this team. It's that front court. And the problem is, first of all, who guards the post at this point? Because we've watched a few years of Nate Austin try to guard the post. And Luke Worthington got better at it by the end of the year last year. And Josh Sharp is okay at it, you know. But these guys are good at rebounding, but they're not necessarily good post defenders. So there's problems on the defensive end. But then also on the offensive end, the real problem is that there's no point production there. And when Eric Mika went off the floor, the Cougars were playing 3-on-5 on offense.
Yeah. And
so I guess my question is what have you heard about the posts to try to help? You know, we played 4-on-5 all year last year offensively. Mm-hmm. What's going to prevent us from playing 3-on-5 all year offensively and just force us to run up and down the floor because we can't play half-court offense?
Well, Jamal Ates. Jamal Ates is what they have put they've gone all in on his basket. Like, if he doesn't produce, they really will be playing 3-on-5 on offense. I just forgot his name. Nielsen. I forgot his first name.
Yeah, Isaac. 6'10". Isaac Nielsen.
Isaac Nielsen, thank you. That kid can shoot. Oh, my gosh. I'm talking legitimate shooting out of a 6'10 guy. And he's not tough. I did get to go watch a couple of their practices this year. He's not tough defensively. He's not tough rebounding-wise, but he's going to shoot probably about 40 to 45% from three. And so if Ates is as good as he looks on film and as good as they hope he is, and you put him out there with a guy like that, it's really going to open up some space for him underneath.
Right. Yeah, and from what I understand about Jamal is that he's sort of a Kena Young type guy. Is he maybe a post scorer?
Yeah, he's only 6'6".
Right. That's like KT.
He doesn't have a ton of lift. He's not gonna dunk on you a lot. But he shoots decently. He can stretch the floor. He's a big wide body. Have you ever seen him?
Wait a second. Yeah, I have. But is he? Are you saying he can shoot like 12 footers? I've been under the impression that he's a guy that works the post and does some of that. But he can shoot a jumper.
Post. That's what he's going to do primarily. But in the summer, in the workouts that I saw him doing, he was actually working with guards and shooting outside. He has a funky release. It looks really weird. But if he's open, he's going to be able to make that shot.
Well, this is good.
Yeah.
And then the third guy that has been talked about is Corbin Kafusi. Uh-huh. And he's I haven't heard as much hype about a guy who, I mean, it's unbelievable. This guy, the amount of hype that this guy is coming in with. Have you had a chance? I haven't had a chance to see him. Have you had to?
I've seen him play twice, and, you know, to be honest, I don't want to sound critical, but when all the hype of him coming out, he's going to play basketball, and he's going to do this, and he's going to do this, I scratched my head going, wait, is that the kid I saw playing? Because that's not what I saw. He's athletic. He can get up and down the court, but he's just raw.
Right.
Granted, I saw him a couple weeks off his mission.
The word is what? Runs hard, blocks shots, rebounds, and dunks on people. That's...
Yep.
Well, listen, yep, I mean...
That's about what you saw.
I've heard stuff like in practice. I mean, you read stuff out there, right? In practice, he's been taking it to Trent Plaisted. And, you know, Trent Plaisted can't even handle him. Where Chris Miles is getting worked. And I sit there and I go, I don't know if I believe. Trent Plaisted's very good. He's extremely good. Really? He's getting destroyed by this guy? I don't know about that.
Now that you brought that up, one of the games I did see him play was against Trent, and he just he just looked like a little kid out there. I mean, Trent really did shut him down and made him look almost bad at times. And we're talking about a guy who's...
He plays in Europe. He's a professional ball player. He's a great player.
Yeah. He's having a great career, too. So, he was drafted in the NBA. People forget about that. He's drafted by the Sonics. So, we're talking about a really good basketball player. He's going to take a little bit. And now if he's not playing, now that he's not playing football, I think you'll see his progression a little bit quicker because he's just playing basketball, which will be good for the basketball team.
So it sounds like, though, that they're – I mean, until – because Ites, he doesn't come into the team until December. So it sounds like for a couple months, you know, when it comes to the post, unless Nate Austin's going to start going – you know, he almost got three offensive boards a game. And I feel like he never goes back up to shoot on an offensive board or, you know, anyway, it just sounds like, boy, the Cougars are going to have to run and do the transition game just like they did last year because they have no other option because they're playing 3-on-5 on offense or maybe, if you're being generous, 4-on-5. But Josh Sharp, Luke Worthington, Nate Austin, these guys aren't going to score for you.
No.
Probably not Corbin from what you're saying.
You know, he'll be if he gets to the front of the rim in transition situations, that's where you're going to see him score. At this point, I haven't seen him enough either to really look at him and be like, well, he can do this in the post, he can do that in the post. But, yeah, you're going to see. But the difference with him is he will get to the front of the rim. He can run with those guards. Hmm. They're not going to get out and ahead. Like you see Nate Austin when they push, Nate Austin kind of isn't past the half-court line by the time the ball's coming back.
Right. Okay.
And so, but Kafusi will be at the front of that rim, which will actually make it a lot easier floor spacing-wise for Haas and Collinsworth and the other guys too.
Well, this is – I mean, it's an important development because without Mika, you know, they needed to find somebody else that they could draw some offense from on that front court or else they're going to be in a lot of trouble scoring. So – they'll be in trouble scoring outside of Haas, right? And so, and Kyle Collinsworth, but that'll be transition based. A lot of games last year that were close did not go the Cougars' way, and a lot of that had to do with no half court offense and free throw shooting. So, and I wonder, do you think free throw shooting should be better?
Off, but another thing that is getting underrated and not looked at is BYU's overall 3-point field goal percentage has gone down every year since Jimmer graduated.
Right.
And if you look at – and that's a big issue in today's game, that they need that – good teams all shoot the three very well, and they need to have that production from their guard lineup to be successful. And if you look at when they were playing well, they were getting that. From Carlino, from even Collinsworth would hit one every once in a while.
Halford
had the game, that stretch of two games where he hit like 60% of his threes.
Yeah,
and that just goes to show how important that aspect of the game has become.
Yeah, and that's where they would get beat sometimes because other teams could really like the game at Portland. That Bobby Sharp. Oh, I'll never forget Bobby Sharp and how he was just hitting shots left and right and. Yeah, the Cougars didn't get a ton of those like deep, you know, downtown tons of 3-pointer games. That just didn't happen all that often. And I mean, we had guys that felt comfortable taking them, but they were just the streakiest. Halford was he's super streaky. Of course, Carlino is going to be legendary for streaky. I mean, that's the one word that comes to mind if you think about his career, probably. Yep. And so, yeah, consistency out there. And you know who started the season good? Like the first half of the season, Anson Winder was shooting pretty well from three. And then as the season went on, it kind of wore off. And I don't know why, but it did.
And I think some of that might go back. If you look at his minutes, it got kind of funky in there for a little while.
Yeah.
And then it picked back up. And then his production picked back up also. So maybe that had something to do with it. He lost his confidence and Rose had to sit him down, or I don't know. But that could have been an issue there too.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think that they're going to be good, though, this year. Just I don't even care who else is on the team. As long as you've got Tyler Haas on this team, that's a 20-win basketball team, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing that's kind of gone under the radar too is Chase Fisher.
Oh yeah,
you know that kid is a great shooter, and I'm not, and I use the word great very, very sparingly. But when I saw him this summer, there were times that he really was the best shooter. I'm not saying the best player.
Right.
But we all know who that is.
Yes.
But there were times that, you know, he'd pull up 35 feet a la Jimmer and just let it fly. And he would just turn around and walk away like it was nothing.
Wow.
And he would do it with a smile on his face. And he just knew it was going down. And it would go down. I mean, really, I haven't seen a prettier jump shot in a long time. And that's what he's going to bring for you. He's going to shoot a lot of threes. I would be surprised if he shoots more than one or two-point jump shots a game, really. But he's going to hit them. He's going to hit them about 42 to 45% clip. And if you have one more guy like that out there, now you're really talking about having a really good season.
And Haas is going to be that.
Yeah.
He's going to be that.
I was talking in addition to Haas.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because you know, Collinsworth is probably only going to shoot.
No. Yeah, I don't 20%. Expect him.
I mean,
I expect him to be around, you know, the Carlino range, the 32%, 31%.
Yeah, somewhere, I would say 29 to 35. 35 would probably be his max that he would get. But, you know, like you brought up, is, you know, if Tyler can have a really good year and he has pieces around him.
Right.
That are really good. And in some ways you do wish that you had an Eric Mika type or, you know, underneath the basket to really help out, because if you look back on Jimmer's senior year, once Brandon Davies went down, his production kind of slipped too.
Yeah.
Well, points didn't slip, but the shot selection and the efficiency really kind of went down.
Well, it's the phrase Jalen Rose uses all the time, but geometry of the floor, it just doesn't it doesn't sit well if you don't got guys under the basket that you have to defend.
Yep.
And you don't have to defend the BYU big men. And honestly, until you see it, you can't trust that they're the answer. And so it'll be really interesting. My eyes are going to be peeled on everybody in that front court, because it really looks like we might be in trouble scoring the basketball. If we ever are not in transition, there could be some trouble there. So, okay. Well, any other big things you want to get to? Anything else on your mind?
The one thing for the basketball team is I think defensively they're actually going to be pretty good this year. Because last year, you know, like you brought up, Eric Mika had a hard time staying on the floor with foul trouble. Nate Austin had a hard time staying on the floor with foul trouble. And Luke Worthington, if you actually look, was worth about a foul a minute.
Right.
Which is insane. That's insane. But this year they can throw more. I mean, we didn't even touch some guys. Dalton Nixon.
Yeah.
Come in and play that,
Andrus,
that four spot. He can score. And, you know, you're talking him and then
Andrus.
Yeah, Andrus. And Andrus, he looks like a freshman, unfortunately. But, you know, if you're just looking to throw a big out there to spell to get foul, you know, because of foul trouble, you're talking about a good five guys that you can just kind of toss out there. Whereas last year, you really only had two. After Austin and Mika, you were kind of hurting because you knew Worthington wasn't going to be able to stay on the floor very well.
Do you think they're going to go?
He's a good post player, but he's only 6'7", so he can't guard the 6'9", 6'10" guys.
Yeah, he's very athletic. He jumps really well, right?
but you know, I weigh way more than he does, and I'm foot shorter, so it's kind of a string bean.
He is a and he used to play for the Utes, so you know it's hard to hard to cheer for him big time. The other thing is, I wanted to ask though, you think, you know, Rose had these illusions of going back to man, and it didn't work, and then they went to zone because you had to hide some people on the defensive end, and in particular, maybe they're hiding. You know, they are hiding Tyler a little bit, and they gave him sort of the Jimmer rule, where we're going to hide you on defense and you got to work hard on offense. But I just think, do you see them sticking with zone, or do you think they're going to try to do the man thing again?
I think they're going to start off trying to do man, mostly because Coach Rose and his coaching staff really believe that basketball is supposed to be played with man-to-man defense.
It's what he prefers, for sure.
Yeah, he prefers to play man-to-man. And, you know, there are going to be some teams that they can do that to. There are going to be teams that they can hide Tyler Hawes in a man-to-man defense.
Right.
And, you know, the luxury you have is with a healthy Kyle Collins or with a guy at 6'6", who can guard a 1 through a 4, you can hide him a lot better that way.
Right.
Whereas, you know, in the Jimmer year, you know, Jimmer's counterpart was Jackson Emery, who was the exact same size. So you're running two little guards out there, and one of them has to guard a quick guard, and then one of them is going to have to guard an off guard who's looking to score too. And so that's really where you got that mix up.
And the other thing too is Jimmer, as crazy as this is going to sound, was a far better zone defender than a man defender.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
He'd get some steals.
It was a lot like his offense. He knows how to use his body and to get to positions to make himself effective. Whereas in man, you're just kind of...
You're on an island.
You look across and say, you're not going to beat me.
Right.
And that's a... You know, in the Mountain West, they always had guys that could beat him, and that's the problem.
Right.
And in the West Coast Conference, I think until you hit Gonzaga, you really don't have that. So you can kind of do it a little bit more. But with all the bigs that they have, I wouldn't be surprised to see them running a lot more zone and trying to use their length to their advantage rather than playing man.
Yeah, I think they should start with zone. But I was going to let you know that all of our listeners who are fans of the San Francisco Dons hate you right now. They all feel disrespected by you.
Well,
tough luck.
Look on the bright side, San Francisco, there's no Matt Carlino, so... You won't have a 30-point blowout there from one player.
So, all right. Well, good. Well, I appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to this basketball season, and hopefully things go a little smoother with the football team, and they have a really nice season.
Yeah, hopefully. Thanks for having me on.
All right, and hey, if they want to find you on Twitter, can they do that?
James M. Taylor 12.
There it is. It's James Taylor, ladies and gentlemen, and go give him a follow on Twitter. Okay, next part of the show is going to be our interview with Kevin Kennedy, and my apologies for some of the technical difficulties within this. That was apparently something went wrong on my end, and during the interview, sometimes Kevin's voice will fall out and come back in, but hope you bear with it. There's lots of great information in there. And so now here's my conversation with Kevin about the BYU Olympic sports. Okay, now on the line here, we have Kevin Kennedy, managing editor of Vanquish the Foe, and of course, the leading expert on BYU Olympic sports. Kevin, how you doing?
Good, thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm doing well. Okay, so listen, you know, a lot of hubbub about these 20th-ranked BYU football Cougars, but I'll tell you what, there's a lot of highly ranked Cougars in some of this other world. So let's start on the one that I have had a lot of fun watching, that women's volleyball team. So obviously they've been led by Jen Hampson as kind of the star of the team because of what she did on the basketball team last year. But if you watch that front line for this women's volleyball team, it just makes your jaw drop. Gray is tall and athletic, and their middle blocker is really good. And so what are some of the – that was my main takeaway. When I first saw this group, I was like, wow, they are tall. They've got length.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've got length, and they're athletic. I mean, they can – you know, jump. They know where to put the ball and how to put the ball where it's supposed to go. I mean, they're just an incredible group. That it's almost like they haven't lost a step without Hampton, and that's great at what she did. You know, I mean, you're looking at three or six sets all year, and all of them were to top 10 opponents.
Yeah, so I mean, they've been dominant, right? I mean, this has been a team that has really done it. And what's their ranking right now? I'm trying to remember.
Last I saw, I believe it was 11th.
So they're ranked 11th, and of course, the way it works for women's volleyball, right, they get 64 teams get in. They get a chance to play it out that way. And this team has been there, you know, year after year after year, and it looks like they're on their way yet again.
Absolutely. I mean, they're just stoning through these opponents, and they're looking like they're going to go to the tournament without any problems, and they could just blow through a lot of these teams and come out with another incredible run.
And, you know, it's been – and by the way, this team is – they look a lot like they're having a lot of fun. There's like that extra element of cohesion that Coach Patchell seems to be finding with these young women. And it's really exciting to watch. Okay, and then let's move on then. Why don't we talk a little bit about the women's soccer team as well? A lot expected from this team, and how have they done early on in their season?
It's almost been like a tale of two different seasons for them. I mean, they came out with a lot of excitement. They lost a couple key factors in their offense, but with the people or the girls coming back, it looked like that they were going to have an offense that couldn't be stopped. And you know, they came out to start the season tying the first two games in overtimes, and then they came out. Beat, I believe it was Tennessee.
Yep.
So they're looking like they were going to start strong. And they lost a few games in a row. And in the first five games, they ended up scoring three goals in the first five. And, you know, people were just wondering what was going on. And then suddenly they come on. And even in a loss against LSU, they came out and scored four goals or three goals. And then they've gone 3-0 since with See, over the last four games, they've scored 11 goals. Yeah, Maddie Lyons got the goal of the week with her little floater over the goalie. That was just an incredible shot.
It's beautiful.
The offense is finally trying to find itself and showing on the pitch.
Yeah, and I think this has been an interesting year for these. You know, this team. They started with these great expectations, and then they. You know, like you said, they had this kind of lull, that three-game losing streak against Baylor, Utah, LSU, and then looks like things are starting to click again and get things going. And, you know, that West Coast Conference for women's soccer is no joke.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think they said that I thought I saw something from the West Coast Conference yesterday saying that half of their teams were ranked in the top half of the country. In women's soccer, and you know, it's I think they're just one of those groups that it's like the men's volleyball conference. You know, the top tier programs are in that conference, and you're gonna have to fight every single game in order to come out of that standing up.
Yeah, I mean it's no joke. You're in a big match every single time, and I think that those. This women's soccer team, I think, you know, they played a really tough non-conference. And I think that that'll end up paying off for them as they go on. One other thing I wanted to ask you about the women's team then is have you been out to see them at Southfield?
Not this year. I haven't had a chance to go out there. I was out there to just try to kind of go out, and, you know, they looked their practices, they look energetic. They look a bit more focused than they did here, though.
Yeah, and that can come when, you know, your expectations and the goals are so high. This team really is believing. They've got the big dream to go deep. I mean, what's your feelings? They made it to the Final Eight a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. How are you, you know, what do you expect to see as they play out the rest of their season and hopefully qualify for the NCAA tournament and then work their way through that?
I would not be surprised in the least if they make another run in the tournament this year. Now that they're starting to find themselves, it was last year where they went deep into the tournament and lost to the eventual national champions back in Florida, I believe, is where they played. And they... You know, that I think that's what led up to the expectations this year is because they only lost a couple pieces that were key. And so I think as they're finding themselves, you know, filling those couple holes they've done with and you know, that's going to take time to get those freshmen involved and to get them situated in the right position every time. And I think by the time the end of the year comes, they could make another run into the NCAA tournament, and the home crowd, they could, you know, definitely bring in the fans for these home field games, and that could be the determining factor to push them over the edge into the Sweet 16 Elite Eight again.
And also that venue that they have in Provo, the South Field, I just wanted to say, if you live in the area, you haven't gone out to see a soccer game at that stadium, it's really fun. It's a great venue. The seats are nice, and the atmosphere there is starting to become a real positive for this team.
Absolutely. And I think they had over 4,000, it was either 3,000 or 4,000 fans last home game. And they got it in a couple games where you can use your basketball passes. I believe if you're a Seven Peaks pass holder, where you can get in, and the cost is very reasonable. I mean, and I think $5 for students, if I remember correctly. And I mean, it's definitely a venue that people don't want to come to because it's starting to become a lot like the Edwards Stadium, where it's hard to win.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is fun is there's a little public easement there. So even if you're just walking by, I've actually had that where I was walking by and I was able to stop and watch in the corner for a little while. So it's cool. It's really cool. So we encourage people to go check that out. Okay, and then you said you want to. This is not an NCAA team, right? But this is a club team. But the men's soccer team, I know nothing about what they're doing at this point.
They're actually not even. Team. They are a professional, sort of a minor league. They're in the PCL. The USPCL, I think, is what it is. So they're actually in the same league as the San Jose Earthquakes under 21 team. They're in fall right now, but they have some friendlies set up. Like tomorrow night, they're going to play at Southfield, same place that the women's soccer plays. And they're going to be playing Utah State as a friendly, and they'll have another one next week next Friday and the following. And they went to the playoffs for the first time in 7 years this last summer. They've got them going in a really good direction and competing in the professional leagues.
And they're coming on. Then it sounds like they're getting better. They've got some more talent there. And it seems like they're going on. Not beyond that, I believe the guy who created the Garrett G, I think he's on the team, uh-huh. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
So if you have the Scan app on your smartphone, just know that a BYU men's soccer player invented it.
Yeah, and a really good one at that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I actually, as a fun fact, I used to be intramural teammates with his older brother. So,
oh, yeah.
Anyway, his older brother was very good, too. anyway, okay. And the last thing, I guess, then we'll cover is women's basketball is coming back. You just wrote, you had a write-up about what to expect from this women's basketball team on Vanquish the Foe. Encourage people to go read that. But what were some of the main takeaways you have about this team that went all the way to Sweet 16 last year?
Some of it is actually similar to the females of the volleyball, because you're losing Jennifer Hampson. You know, and she was such a big part of that team last year that went to the Sweet 16 and even gave UConn a game. They took them into the second half, deep into the second half. And just replacing that size isn't going to be just a walk in the park. But they've got quite a few players that can really pull up and take that place. You've got some of these... she's going to be doing she's going to be the one scoring. But they've got a really good large guard base. So you're going to see them play a lot of three guards, but the third guard is going to be as tall, if not taller, than some of those forward positions on the other teams.
Yeah, and the shooting was really good. They had a lot of clutch players last year. Zojan Harry was a player that I Ashley Garfield's another one that I remember watching, and I just kept feeling like, wow, they keep hitting these big shots all the time. And of course, Lexi Eaton's back. She's great. Yeah, so, I mean, they've got a lot of talent at the guard line, but that Kylie Maeda, I think she is one of my favorites to watch out there because she's first of all, she's tiny. She's so small. But the other thing that she's really good at kind of setting the table and, you know, calming things down and getting the ball where it needs to go. And she's not necessarily like a shooting threat, though she can shoot a little bit. I just really think that she puts her team in the right position to really make some plays. Honestly, what she does on the floor is something I think BYU needs to find from its guards on the men's side this year.
Absolutely. And she's that floor general that you're always looking for on a basketball team. You know, she can distribute the ball with precision. She knows where to get the ball and when to get there. I know it's you know, people will go back and look at it and say, well, last year all she had to do was get it down to Jennifer. You know, you got an NBA or a WNBA star in the upcoming, but you know, the time she got it down to the others is when they needed it to be. And she is just, she's got the floor smarts. She's got the shot when needed, but she just shoots that ball and knows when to get to the right people. And you know, you can't teach that.
No. And she did a very good job. I think you'll see her contribute a ton again to this team this year. And then I wanted to talk about, for the newcomers, the person that I kind of have my eye on as probably the most important newcomer is Alohi Robbins-Hardy. She's 6'2", great athlete, Kamehameha High School there in Hawaii, and, you know, was a great, she played volleyball, she's an excellent volleyball player, and of course she's lined up for this basketball team to be one of their forwards. But you wrote a little bit about her experience over in Spain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she's one to definitely keep an eye out because she made her presence known. And what people don't realize, I don't think, is that when they went over to Spain, they didn't play just a standard team. One of those games was a co-ed team, and they still won. And they went up against whoever was placed in front of them. They played some close games, and you know, Robbins-Hardy was a big part of that. She made her presence be known on the court, and she's going to need to do that in order for BYU to continue to be successful because they need that extra body out there that can play, because they're gonna be physical, and you know, when we get teams that are physical, that means people are going to be into foul trouble, and so the depth is huge, and she is going to play a big part of that.
They also, looks like they have another freshman on this team, Savannah Irwin. She's 6'5". Wow.
Yeah, they've got some height on this team. Savannah Irwin is 6'5", and then you've got Bailey and Robbins-Hardy are both the 6'2".
So right.
They're in that the forward and center position, and so they're going to get a lot of rebounds because of that.
Last fun fact I have about the women's basketball team: Maddie Ziering Smith is Michael Smith's daughter. So I expect her to be able to score and score at will. And shoot amazingly from the free throw line and he was known as the renegade because he had style on the floor because he had a bowl cut and things like that. And I haven't seen Maddie yet, but we'll have to see if she's the same sort of fashion trendsetter the way her dad was. And hopefully she's I think she's going to be a very different kind of ball player because she's 5'5", you know, he was 6'10". So, but fun fact.
Yeah, but I can imagine he gave her a good lessons on the shot, and so I would expect that she's still got a really good shot to go with it. So,
Yeah, and she didn't get involved too much last year, and I don't know what the plans are this year, but I just wanted to – I kind of have a personal rooting interest for her because I love Michael Smith, so there's that. Okay, well, so – and it's an exciting thing. Now, which of these Olympic sport teams do you think, you know, come the winter semester, by this next semester, we're going to go, well, that was the most successful team?
That's hard to – and it's hard to decide because they all have so much potential. But if on the spot to pick one at this point, it's hard to go against the volleyball team, just because they're playing so well and there's so much. I mean, they took undefeated Utah team and dispatched them in what, an hour and 5 minutes on Friday night.
And it was straightforward. They weren't doing like
really even close.
Yeah, it wasn't even close, and they were straightforward too. They didn't break out backslides and things like that until late in that match. And so it was just straightforward. We're gonna pound it down your throat and stop it, and they couldn't.
Exactly, but I also wouldn't be surprised to see the basketball team make another deep run if they can gel quickly.
Yeah, and I think that they'll gel. I think it's just that it's post play. But again, Morgan Bailey's back, and yeah, she's more like a stretch four. So they need a real post player to kind of step up, and that'll be interesting to see if that'll happen. Mm-hmm. Okay, so but you're on the record, right? Final four, women's volleyball.
Okay, we'll go yes.
All right. Well, there it is. So, okay, Reed, Kevin, at Vanquish the Foe, he's the guy that allows me to publish stuff and probably has some heart failure sometimes with some of the stuff I turn in. But, yeah, he does a great job. He and Kevin Schaefer are the managing editors over at Vanquish the Foe. And if they want to follow you on Twitter, and they should, you're a good follow. What's your handle?
It's at Kevin for the number four, BYU.
Okay, Kevin, the number four, BYU. So go check him out and read his stuff on Vanquish the Foe. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to CougarCast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games, and go Cougars!